And really all they're presenting with is something like an adrenal fatigue, but it really is the exception to the rule. Now, having said that, of course, the Institute for Hormonal Health, people are obviously self-selecting themselves to be in my practice.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know these people, they're people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Christy Prowse. Dr. Prowse is an obstetrician and gynecologist who has gone on to discover our side of things, the world of functional medicine. Dr. Prowse is an associate professor at the University of Toronto and is the founder and chief medical officer at the Institute for Hormonal Health. She has walked the full spectrum of medical experience, and she's landed at a place where she is able to address people's health, men and women, through a lens of hormonal balance with a huge disposal of tools in front of her. We had a really enlightening conversation looking at how we assess and treat hormones, the pressures that cause these things to run amok for many of us, and ways that we can go about addressing them other than simply applying the birth control pill as a universal tool. It was a really fascinating discussion because we were able to have it from a perspective and paradigm that gave us access to multiple ways of thinking about our hormones, about our bodies, and ultimately their effect on our performance, on our brains out there in the real world. It was an enlightening conversation personally, and I know it's something that's going to be fascinating to all of you. Dr. Christy Prowse, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to chat with you this evening. I have a laundry list of things that I want to ask you. And true to form, what's going to happen is I'm going to ask you the very first question, and then we're going to get lost in conversation. But what makes you so interesting is you get my side of things from a naturopathic and functional medicine side, but you came into this sphere of inquiry through a traditional medical route as a medical doctor, as an obstetrician and gynecologist. Can you share with us a little bit about your journey and your journey through medicine and your personal journey that brought you to where you are right now?
Yeah. It really was my own health crisis that, you know, rattled my cage, of course, and through necessity forced me to look at things very differently. And so for me, you know, the constellation of symptoms that I was struggling with, which I now know to be cortisol dysregulation or adrenal fatigue, which is a stress-related phenomena, really didn't fit any conventional diagnosis that I was aware of. So that whole idea of physician heal thyself, well, you know, with my conventional training, I was certainly at a loss. And so I turned, it kind of makes me laugh now, but out of desperation, out of necessity, turned to naturopathic and traditional Chinese medicine, which, of course, you know, as a conventionally trained doctor requires that, you know, I need to open my mind and more importantly, my heart to looking at things differently, another paradigm. And in that really was the answer that I was looking for. Not only the answer for my own physical issues, but what happened in the process was the shifting of both the mind and the spirit. And that was the real key to my healing and well-being. So, you know, through this journey and seeing for sure that one of my sort of big mandates is I get that I'm here to serve others and I take that role very seriously. So with this new knowledge and what I now understood through my own trials, I just had to share this with others. And I really could no longer carry on in the conventional paradigm once I saw things from a different perspective. And so I had to make a difference for others too, with what I knew. So I left my old way of thinking behind and wholeheartedly embraced this idea of a holistic approach and getting at the root cause, the body's innate ability to heal itself, the whole mind-body-spirit connection. And well, I'm certainly much happier for it. And, you know, so these are where you see blessings in hardships.
I have to ask. So I'm married to a conventionally trained medical doctor.
Okay.
And so we have really good conversations about things. But what did your colleagues or your former colleagues or friends say when you're like, you know what, I'm embracing this new paradigm?
Yeah, it was very interesting because, of course, I had my own apprehensions about doing it, and there was a whole lot of fear surrounding making this big leap, and part of the fear was about talking to my own group of, at the time, 10 obstetricians were in our group, and but I had to make the leap. So when I spoke to them and said that I, not only was I leaving, but I was leaving to pursue something very different and this integrative approach, in the moment there was some support and, you know, comments like being a trailblazer and whatnot. And I can't necessarily say they've been entirely supportive or not. I really do get the sense that, you know, they're sort of sitting back and watching how this all goes. And, you know, and I'm not oblivious to the fact that many think that I've chosen to do something that's out of line or, you know, wacky or woohoo or whatever. But at the end of the day, you know, for me, not only personally, I'm feeling so much better and so much more in alignment about it, but I can see the results that we're getting with patients. And you just can't deny that, right? The proof is in the pudding. And I no longer am too terribly concerned about what others think about where I'm at. And again, that's part of my own personal journey as well, is moving beyond caring and certainly moving beyond the fear. That that was a must as well.
Yeah, well, amen to that, and welcome to this place. I say on the continuum of care. I mean, I don't see these things as either ors. I think everyone has a place on that spectrum. What I found is I really like heading upstream and starting to address things at that fundamental and root cause before they're out of control. And it's interesting too that you say it was your own health crisis that brought you to this point. How does someone dialogue with their physician about the fact that they don't feel well when their blood work doesn't corroborate that? Because this is a frustration of so many of my patients where they say, you know, my doctor says I'm fine, but I'm not. Like, I just don't feel well. How do you bridge that? How do you bridge that conversation? How would you suggest they do it?
Yeah, well, it's a tough one, and I'm certainly hearing the same thing as well. And you know, unfortunately, just as you say, there's a whole spectrum of docs out there. You know, those that are incredibly open-minded and those that are incredibly closed-minded. And you know, it is hard to break down some of those barriers if you've got a doc that's, you know, really choosing not to listen to what their patients have to say. And you know, beyond persistence and, you know, and or bringing some of the literature to their attention, and again, that can still be met with some disregard, and there's barriers all along the way. But hopefully, you know, you've got a doc that's open-minded enough to at least entertain that there may be another way of looking at it. But yeah, it's a huge challenge. And in, you know, my patient population, they've typically already, you know, seen 4 or 5 doctors before they walk, you know, through our doors. And, you know, and again, it just really takes looking at things a little differently. But, you know, the funny thing is, you know, a good chunk of what I see every day, of course, at the root of it is an adrenal fatigue, a stress-related phenomena. Not too many doctors out there who they themselves are not going to have experienced it at some point in time and or are currently supporting it and or experiencing it. So it is a challenge. There's no question.
Yeah, I think adrenal fatigue is one of those invisible culprits that catches all of us off guard at some point or another. And we've talked a little bit about it in the podcast before. Can you explain what adrenal fatigue is and what women in particular should be looking for symptomatically in terms of understanding whether or not this might be something that explains their lack of fine or lack of feeling well?
Yeah, so really adrenal fatigue, it's a bit of a misnomer. I'm not crazy about it. I generally refer to it as cortisol dysregulation, and cortisol is our chronic stress hormone. And so when we are continually under the gun, whether it be emotional and psychological stressors or any infections, inflammation of the body, food sensitivities, environmental toxins, those are all stressors to the body. And so in this day and age, of course, there's really no generation that has lived the way we live now before us. And so our system is constantly under the gun. And so therefore, a lot of us are struggling with cortisol dysregulation. And that's basically will show up with anything from fatigue to sleep disruption, anxiety, depression, weight management issues, thyroid issues. It can undermine sex hormone balances. So cortisol is a foundation hormone, and if that gets thrown off, it impacts on a whole lot of other hormones downstream from it. And so if think of the list that I just rattled off, whether it be, you know, fatigue or sleep disruption, the anxiety, the depression, the weight management, those are big problems that we're seeing, you know, collectively out there. And unfortunately, the conventional world, as long as they fail to recognize adrenal fatigue as an entity, are going to miss it. And so tend to treat symptoms independently when really there is a root cause. And often it is that cortisol dysregulation that's throwing things out of whack.
So how do we overcome that when we live in this pervasively stressful world? Like, we can talk about treatments for it, but when we're looking at maintenance or people say, I don't want to even go there, what do you talk about? What do you talk about with people in terms of preventing adrenal fatigue?
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those funny things, because some of us are, you know, and I definitely include myself in this as well. Like, I was stubborn. I missed the tap on the shoulder and I missed the kick in the shins. And I really had to be taken out before I realized that there was something that I needed to address. You know, I think we often show up in this world without thought as to why we show up in the world the way that we do, you know, whether it be through, you know, family constructs or societal constructs, cultural constructs about, you know, what we are told is the way that we should show up. So, you know, nose to the grindstone, multitasking is a good thing. You know, a job's not done till a job's done. You know, we should, if you're going to show up, you show up 150%. And, you know, so there's a lot of things that we just see as being who we are, or we haven't really thought twice about it, failing to recognize that these very things are the same things that are killing us slowly. So, you know, for me, I wasn't going to learn my lesson until I really had to learn my lesson. And so, you know, I can say all the wonderful things about, you know, reducing your stress or changing your perspective on your stress. And, but it is often met with this, you know, shaking of the head. Well, that it's just not possible. And I know that those are the people that unfortunately are going to have to learn the hard way. But the reality is that most people who have a healthy perspective on their stress, they found that, you know, the whole idea of positive thinking and gratitude and, you know, that there are blessings and opportunities in our trials, and they're the ones that tend to weather really quite well. You know, so it really is about the mind-spirit connection, and that's where we get well and we stay well. And some of us are fortunate enough to be there right from the beginning, and there are those of us that have to live and learn to get there.
Well, and it's so multifactorial. I was saying before we started this interview, I just came back from a conference in Phoenix, and we were looking at the genetic profiles of resilience and stress management pathways and detoxification pathways. And it was so fascinating to start to look at these various profiles and the way we really all have kind of have a cup, and some people's cup is big from the beginning and some people's are little, and they overflow at different stages. And it's not a judgment of how smart you are, how good you are at managing stress. We all have a different size cup, and unfortunately we don't know how big it is when we're starting out.
Yeah, and that's so true. I mean, I think there's a certain personality too, right, that sort of sets themselves up for adrenal fatigue, and that's just one of those things. And I think in many ways those are the people that tackle and take on jobs that are perhaps more stressful because they are good at managing stress, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't eventually catch up with some of us sooner rather than later, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think that estrogen in women in particular has anything to do with a susceptibility to adrenal fatigue?
Estrogen specifically, what I see is that adrenal fatigue and cortisol dysregulation will undermine the balance between estrogen and progesterone, and that's through the cortisol steel effect. And so basically, progesterone is what I call a mother hormone, and it's sort of upstream from all the other hormones, and it mother hormone because it makes aldosterone, which manages our blood pressure and salt metabolism, and cortisol, our stress hormone, but also estrogen and testosterone. And so under chronic stress, our body will choose to take progesterone, that mother hormone, and dump it into cortisol. And when it spends so much effort dumping into cortisol, you do so at the expense of progesterone itself, and therefore other hormones downstream. And so it's not uncommon to see, you know, certainly younger women in their teens, 20s, and 30s who develop what's called an estrogen dominance. And that estrogen dominance comes along with heavy and often painful periods and PMS-like symptoms, breast tenderness, and whatnot. And so that sort of creates an estrogen dominance, that adrenal fatigue or cortisol dysregulation. But then there's the whole, sort of age-related phenomena that none of us get away with. And, you know, classically in our 40s, when we're no longer ovulating as reliably as we once upon a time did, we don't produce the progesterone to balance our estrogen. So here we are, we find ourselves in an estrogen dominant situation just by age alone as our ovaries start to dwindle. But an adrenal fatigue will only aggravate by that cortisol steel effect, that discrepancy between estrogen and progesterone. So become even more estrogen dominant. And then of course, postmenopausally, as our ovaries really do start to fail and estrogen and progesterone start to fall off, then an adrenal fatigue will even further exaggerate that phenomena and any symptoms that come along with menopause. So there's definitely a connection between the two, but that seems to be the classic direction that chronic stress can create a problem and or certainly aggravate any other pre-existing hormonal imbalance.
Go meditate, ladies. So have you ever met a woman who has a perfect hormonal balance?
Well, I like to think that that's me.
But, amazing. What does that feel like?
Well, it does feel pretty good, but I have to admit that, you know, I have at my age progesterone replacement to find that perfect balance.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, right. And it but I certainly know the difference between what I was feeling like before and what I feel like now. And you know, I do. You do periodically see women whose, sex hormones do appear to be in good balance, and symptomatically they seem to be well balanced, and really all they're presenting with is something like an adrenal fatigue. But it really is the exception to the rule. Now, having said that, of course, the Institute for Hormonal Health, people are obviously self-selecting themselves to be in my practice, and so no surprises that the bulk of them do, in fact, have a sex hormone imbalance. But, you know, we're living in a crazy day and age, and, we're getting hammered from all directions, whether it is adrenal fatigue or whether it's the environmental toxins that are throwing off our hormones. So, certainly in my practice, it's not very often that I get to see somebody that is really well-balanced. Guys seem to bounce back, you know, much, much more easily and get things in check. They're just, I guess, you know, simpler from a hormonal perspective, and they rebound quite nicely. But women are just more complicated beings, I think, in many ways, and certainly hormonally, they're more challenging. But yeah, a normal, well, yeah, I suppose it exists, but in my experience, few and far between in my practice.
Yeah, fair enough. And you mentioned something in there. You talked about environmental influences on estrogen dominance and dysregulation. Talk to us a little bit about the types of things that you instruct your patients to watch out for, because the environmental push towards estrogen dominance is quite significant. It is something that I think people have more control over than they realize.
Yeah, absolutely. There, you know, in our environment, we are constantly being exposed to what's called xenoestrogens, which are basically, you know, chemical compounds that are found in our environment, and they behave like estrogens, and they look chemically like estrogens, and they bind to our estrogen receptors. But they're not estrogens, and but they certainly can contribute to this estrogen dominance. And our body really doesn't know how to break them down. And so we see the consequences of this accumulation. And so we see it in things like our pesticides in our food, and also found in our drinking water, in plastic water bottles, our canned goods. One of the big offenders is in our health and beauty products. And of course, we're slathering that and often multiple types of creams and shampoos and conditioners and makeup. And our skin is a tremendous absorptive surface. And, you know, and so to be applying some of these known xenoestrogens is, we have to be very cautious. So even for me, it's why I carry a cosmetic line. I carry a hair product line that is in a natural aesthetic line. It's all really clean product, because I'm looking to take the guesswork out of it for patients, right? It, you know, our products that are on the market are chock full of this stuff, and you know, you have to know what you're looking for. And but there are also some really great clean products out there, and you know, and the same thing with cleaning products. You know, we're just being exposed, and there is a way to reduce our personal load. You know, we're never going to get away from it entirely. You, me, and everybody else is living in the same environment, and we are going to be exposed, but there are ways that we can reduce our own personal load.
Yeah, and it's really a shift for people. I know a lot of people say, I'm not giving up my beauty products. I'm not giving up this. I don't think anyone's asking you to not shower and to forego deodorant. Mm-hmm. It's just the opportunity to educate yourself around perhaps a more empowered spectrum of decisions. And sure. you know, in having this conversation and looking at, you know, have we ever met a more balanced woman than you? I'm not sure, but you know, one of the conversations, I'm just teasing, that I have with my patients all the time is they look at me so surprised when I say, you know, not everyone takes Advil to manage their period every month, and they just have this sort of dumbfounded look, like, what do you mean? I thought that was normal. And we have these conversations around the concept of common versus normal. If we're talking about someone's menstrual cycle, huge variability, what would you consider normal? What's a normal spectrum of symptoms?
Yeah, so you know, there's a whole lot of different ways of looking at this, but periods really are considered normal when they're regular in timing, meaning from the beginning of one period to the beginning of the next period is roughly about the same number of days, give or take a few days. So the average cycle length, as I say, from the beginning of one period to the next is 28 days, but it's still considered normal if you have a period that comes regularly every 21 days. Or as long as every 35 days. So the regularity is important with that. There are parameters on the cycle length, but it's probably broader than what most women think. It's really that 21 to 35 days, with 28 days just being average. And then the average duration of the period itself is typically about 3 to 5 days, and usually is heaviest day 2. Periods that last beyond 8 days are considered abnormal. And, you know, go along with some of our definitions of menorrhagia, which is heavy menstrual bleeding. And then, you know, to follow that up, what's considered too heavy, well, it's a little bit harder to measure blood losses or what is considered heavy, but technically by definition, it's a period where you lose more than 80 cc's of, or 80 mils of blood loss per period. What that typically translates, though, is to somebody who's having flooding through pads, through tampons, or the passage of large clots. And certainly if somebody is having heavy enough periods that they become anemic, that would be considered abnormal as well. And although it is normal to get some warning signs that your period is coming soon, you might get a little bit of mild cramping, not worthy of Advil, and some breast tenderness. Like, it really shouldn't be excessive, and it shouldn't really include the PMS symptoms that we talk about. And certainly if there's spotting at mid-cycle or spotting leading up to a period, that would not be considered normal as well. So there's a bunch of things that we need to consider: regularity, cycle length, the duration of the period itself, and the heaviness of the period, and any of symptoms that would come in the latter half. The PMS profile, which of course we see a lot of, it really doesn't have to be that way.
And so what I know is happening right now is people are listening to this and they're going, oh crap, like, I'm not normal. What do I do about this? And I'm really curious because, and I'm sure you see this in your patient population, and I'm not going to make any assumptions about how you might approach this, but mm-hmm. for many women, they have a conversation with their doctor and they say, listen, my periods are irregular, or I have excessive cramping, or whatever it is that's creating discomfort for them. And the solution mm-hmm. to the problem is the birth control pill. Is mm-hmm. is that, you've got a lot of tools at your disposal, and that is still one of them. Is that an option of choice for you? And if so, when? Can of worms alert.
Well, it is a can of worms alert, but if I'm entirely honest, when I was, winding down or making the decision to leave conventional medicine, and you're right, I mean, of course, I do take the tools with me in many ways, but one of the things I felt most conflicted about was the oral contraceptive. And I really, at the time I was dealing largely with postpartum women and needing to have that conversation around contraception. And that's where I felt most conflicted, is knowing what the conventional world was saying and knowing what I now knew to be true. And it was one of the reasons why I really just had to leave one world and start the other. Like, I couldn't walk, on both sides at the same time in that regard. So, I mean, I think the birth control pill definitely is not the only solution. And in fact, in the 5.5 years that I've been doing what I do, I've not once have resorted to oral contraceptive pill. Does that mean that I haven't used other conventional approaches or pharmaceutical grade approaches? No, I think there is a role, and in some cases, of course, there's still surgical options. I am a surgeon myself, and although I no longer operating or on labor and delivery for that matter, doesn't mean that I don't see that there is value. It all serves a purpose. But for the birth control pill itself, yeah, there's a lot of other ways that we can manage periods. And, when I think first and foremost, you have to have proper investigation. And that's one thing that I do differently now than I did in when I was wearing my last hat. And that's really understanding what somebody's individual hormone levels are at, and doing it the best way. You can look at hormones in a whole bunch of different ways, but really at the end of the day, you want to make sure that you're getting the best measure and able to look at the full spectrum and the broad picture of hormones, because they really don't function in isolation. And, as far as treatment goes, it really for me isn't, birth control pills about tenfold higher doses of hormones than what our body would normally produce. So really what it's doing is just shutting down the brain's communication with the ovaries, where I like to work more within physiologic ranges, achieving balance, and not using hormones that don't match our own hormones. And so what I'm using is often something called bioidentical progesterone. Although there are ways, there are some situations where you can use herbal remedies to balance periods. And as I say, I use a fair amount of bioidentical progesterone, but I'm also looking at the much bigger picture. So you know, I will be addressing an adrenal fatigue. There's no point in addressing a sex hormone imbalance if you're not addressing an underlying more fundamental cause to the problem.
So I want to talk about bioidentical hormones, but I want to go back first. And you mentioned the best way to do an assessment. In your opinion, what is the best way to assess where someone's at hormonally?
Yeah, I think when it comes to sex hormones in particular, the best way and what I do in my office is with dried urine hormone. And I do that because it can capture, you know, 4 points of cortisol throughout the day, but it's also looking at estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, and their metabolites. And when I say metabolites, like how is your body choosing to break down, for example, your estrogens? Is it breaking it down in a protective way or not in a protective way? And, you know, what can we do to shift the body into breaking down these estrogens in a more protective way? And so for me, dried urine hormone is the way that I go, and I like it because when and if I do put somebody on bioidentical hormones, then I'm still using the very same measure to, meaning the dried urine, to look at hormones once again. And so, you know, there are other ways of doing it. A lot will use saliva, and saliva when somebody is not on bioidentical hormones is fine. But as soon as you put them on bioidentical hormones, you lose some of your accuracy. And so I like to keep it consistent. And so it's the dried urine hormone that I use.
Are you using the Dutch test for that?
I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I had a conversation with a clinical geneticist on the podcast. We recorded it last week. I'm not sure in which order this is coming out. And he said they're starting to identify some really unique pathways that identify risk factors for women going on the birth control pill, which I actually think will facilitate some interesting discussions. When we're talking about birth control in particular, do bioidentical hormones offer a solution there? Or what is the least interventional birth control in your opinion, or that you use in your practice?
Yeah, it's a great question, because unfortunately there isn't really any good effective hormonal natural, if you want to call it natural hormonal way of contraception. And so, you know, if somebody is looking for an effective one that they don't have to think about and is non-hormonal, it's the copper IUD. Now, I get that that's not up everybody's alley, and you know, so alternatively we're looking at condoms, which need to be considered anyway, because, you know, many forms of contraception aren't protective against sexually transmitted diseases. So, you know, sometimes you're using an IUD and a condom. And then, of course, abstinence. You know, so we are kind of limited in effective and, you know, certainly bioidentical hormones, nice to achieve balance, and it's to get into the ranges that you would require to prevent pregnancy would be fraught with other challenges as well.
Well, you're not really in a nice to achieve balance when you are shutting down the reproductive system.
Exactly.
Yeah. The two have different goals. You know, having walked this journey and having had the opportunity to work with women in both paradigms, and recognizing that everyone's on a different state of readiness in terms of their willingness to adopt different things. If you could go back, is there one message that you're like, I just wish I could have echoed this message before in my former life, or that you could share with more women? Is there one truth that you're like, I wish we knew this?
I think it really comes down to, And this really is both men and women, but somehow we've sort of adopted this idea that stress, yeah, we get that it causes problems, but I think we largely see it as a sort of a psychological phenomenon. And what gets lost is that there really is a real physiologic consequence to our chronic stress. And if we don't bring it into check, you know, it can be responsible for significant and irreversible disease processes like high blood pressure and diabetes and cancers. Forget about just feeling crappy because of sleep disruption and anxiety and depression and so on. You know, so I often hear patients saying things to me like, oh yeah, I haven't been sleeping well, but I'm just stressed. And, you know, are then surprised to find out that it's not just a busy or worried mind that's keeping them awake, but that it's actually hormonal disruption and, you know, depletion of vitamins and nutrients that are causing the issue. Or, you know, I'll ask, you know, about stress levels and the response will be, well, I'm no more busy than anyone else, as though just because everyone else is going at 100 miles an hour sort of negates the consequences of stress. Or as I sort of alluded to earlier too, is that, you know, believing sort of that without question that these crazy hectic lives that we live is just beyond our control. It just is. That it's the same sort of the intelligent, the nose to the grindstone, the overachieving, the multitaskers, they're the very ones that are most likely to experience, adrenal fatigue and these stress-related consequences. And, you know, as I've said earlier, these characteristics, they've surfaced so well in so many ways, and we adopt them without really any question, but failing to recognize that these are the same ways that are killing us slowly. And, rarely, unless we hit rock bottom, are we forced to reevaluate and even consider that there's another way of doing things and other ways of showing up in the world. So, I just wish that we would sometimes be better at challenging some of the beliefs that we have and understand that our personality in so many ways isn't necessarily our personality. Like, there are things absolutely that we can modify and thankfully modify. And we can choose to show up differently in the world. And I would say for myself, amazingly enough, I have made, tons of changes, but I haven't lost who I am. And in fact, the way I show up is even more effective and efficient than I, ever used to be. And yet I'm achieving that better balance and I'm certainly happier for it. And I found a peace that I never had before. And, so I think, it's really important that we understand truly how important it is to address the mind and the spirit, because that's where real healing comes from. And if you want to get better and stay better, that's what needs to be addressed.
Amen, sister. I love that. Mm-hmm. Do you have on that spectrum, do you have some hormonal hacks that you include in your own life? And those can be anything from meditation to tablespoons of flaxseed. Like, do you have some things that are absolute musts that you do from a preventative hormonal balancing perspective that are not bioidentical hormones?
Yeah. Well, I think what you spoke about mindfulness. Mindfulness for me, definitely, I would say that I had a very busy mind before all of this. And, I'm that personality that you give me something to do and I'll do it 150%. Well, I did that with mindfulness as well. But the beauty in that is that now I don't even have to think about being mindful. I, for the most part, I just am. And that certainly has gone a long way. And again, this took me sort of crashing and burning for me to see it now, but I am much better at recognizing when I need to pull back a little bit and, to achieve that balance that, it doesn't have to be done right now. And, so I'm much, much better at that than I ever used to be. I really like a buffered alkalinized vitamin C. I think, when you look at some of the nutrients that we are most deficient in, it's vitamin C and magnesium are kind of the two classics. So vitamin C, I don't necessarily, for me, take regularly because I don't have to anymore, but I certainly know if I'm anticipating going through a stressful time or I find myself in the thick of going, at that 100 miles an hour, then I certainly, add that to my regimen. And and magnesium. Magnesium is great at calming the mind and helping you sleep and helping with bowel regularity. And, for so many of us, and I prove this on objective testing every day. So, and everybody's really different, but those are sort of classically the two that, they get deplete. And, what else do I do? I really like yoga, a hot yoga in particular. And then that sort of ties into the mindfulness and being present. And for me, that too was a busy mind thing. When I first started yoga, I thought it was dumb. Everybody kept telling me it was going to calm my mind. Well, it didn't. And it's so funny because I hear patients say that now. Oh, my mind's too busy to do to do yoga. And I know what they mean by that, but it really, for me, I had to take it up a notch. And I, you know, hot yoga at first was enough to, you know, take me out of my head. And I was definitely finding it a challenge. Then eventually had to even take it up a notch to, you know, extreme hot yoga to quiet the mind. But again, once you've kind of mastered that quiet mind, you know, with things like, you know, meditation and yoga and mindfulness, it really, it just becomes a new way and a habit. And there is no effort that has to go into it. It just is. You can find quiet amongst the chaos.
I love how my type A'ers love hot yoga.
So true, right?
It's this commonality. Yeah. It's totally great. And I'm sure you find this in your practice. The people who should be in yoga are the ones who go to 5 spin classes a week. And the one that so you want to send to a spin class are like, I've had my 8th yoga class for the day. So it's like, it's yin and yang, right? When you're more yin, we're going to try to bring on some yang activities and vice versa. How would you define health?
Yeah, it's become so much more than the absence of disease, which of course is how I would have looked at it before. But now I really feel that I understand what it is to be healthy. Even though I would have considered myself healthy prior to feeling unwell with adrenal fatigue, like I would have told you that I was healthy. But now that I am in alignment, you know, emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, in all sort of aspects of my life, now I know what it means to be healthy. And it is absolutely not just the absence of disease. It is about alignment. It's about balance. It's about peace and joy and contentment and all those wonderful things that we're all seeking.
I love this. I love watching the journey that you've had the opportunity to walk.
Oh, like, thank goodness, right? I am so glad that this has been my experience. You know, not only do I feel so much better myself, but what an amazing opportunity to be able to share it with other people.
Mm. Well, mm-hmm. we're all more fortunate for you having walked that journey.
This episode is brought to you by the Genetic Summit. I don't know about you, but I want to know everything I can about how to take my life and my health to the next level. Looking at genetic information to be able to address your health at a totally different place is cutting edge, and it's precision medicine at its best. Our friend James Maskell from the Evolution of Medicine has pulled together leading experts from around the world together to present information from August 21st to 28th in the free online Genetic Summit. This is an opportunity to understand what you need to know about getting testing, how to interpret the information, and what changes you realistically need to make in your life on a daily basis to take the way you are living to a whole new place. For more information or to register for the summit, go to meganwalker.com/genetics summit. We'll see you there.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do the second part of the interview, and it's not nearly as long as the first part. But part two, I call my KPIs. So just like in a startup or business, we have key performance indicators that suggest how a business or company are doing. I believe we have some of the same things for our life. And so these are sort of really quick questions where we get a sense of who you are and some of the habits that make up this healthy, hormonally balanced person that you are. So first question, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
I'm not much of a morning person.
To the relief of hundreds.
Yeah, I know. My husband said to me the other day, he was reading an article about entrepreneurs and what makes an entrepreneur successful. And he rattled off everything. He said, see, you've got this all except for you don't get up first thing in the morning and have this routine. I kind of looked at what others would consider their morning routine is probably my bedtime routine. And that is more about that quiet time, that meditating, that time of being present and the gratitude and prayer and whatnot. That for me, my morning routine happens at night before I go to bed.
Smart.
Other than that, I'm racing out the door.
Hormonal hacks 101. I like it.
Yep.
Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Oh, nonfiction. That has actually changed over time too. I would say that I used to be much more into fiction, and now it's quantum physics.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah.
What is the one thing you are most consistent with respect to your health?
I would have to say that mindfulness part of it. As I say, it's just become habit, become routine. And I do think that it's really, really key. And I think, certainly, again, it's no longer something that I have to pay attention or do deliberately, is sort of looking at things with a positive spin or a grateful spin. It's all just become routine, but I think it's also really key. It's the faith component too, just trusting and surrendering. I no longer have to surrender anymore because I just do. So I think those are the sorts of things that I have become, this habit.
This is inspiring. Surrender is my word right now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for fun or play?
My husband happens to live on the other side of the planet. And so fun or play is traveling. And, I've been to places now that I never imagined that I would be. And including Australia was on my dream board. And now I've been many, many times to Australia, which is where he lives. And, been meet him in various places in the United States, and now off to Italy tomorrow. So
it's amazing.
These fun places.
We're so lucky to have you. Last question. Yeah. Entrepreneurism. Are we born this way, or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Ooh, I think we're kind of born that way. I wouldn't have known that until doing what I've most recently been doing. But when I think back about it, yeah, everything from, I remember there was a teacher's strike when I was 9. So I took it upon myself to educate the local kids in my community. I, had a lawn care company that put me through university. So I guess I've been an entrepreneur for a very long time.
I love these stories.
Yeah. So I'd have to say born that way.
Amazing. Dr. Prowse, it was a pleasure to have you this evening. Tell us a little bit more about the Institute for Hormonal Health and where people can follow up to learn more about your really important work.
Yeah. So the Institute is in Oakville, downtown Oakville, Ontario. And although we do a lot of remote consultations, it's truly an integrative and holistic practice where we do address hormonal issues, but the hormonal issues aren't just what you might think they are. It goes well beyond that, and we've got everything from an oncology division to a natural aesthetics division to brain health, neurotransmitters, and gut health, and pain management. We've covered a broad spectrum of issues, and the best way to find this information is at www.hormonalhealth.ca.
Amazing. And we'll have all of that information in our show notes so people can access you and your team. Thank you again for being here. I really appreciate you taking some time this evening. And I know it's a busy week before you head on over to Europe tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you. I really had a lot of fun. And I thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Take care.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.